Yo! What up?
That was hella loud. Holy shit.
Just want to wake you up a little bit.
I mean, I am awake.
Just woke up the rest of my house, too.
Pretty much.
Oh, man. Just want to start off some high energy, you know? Feel like...
Yeah, I mean, we got to do that. I mean, it's been a long week for, like, at least me, and I'm pretty sure you.
Oh, yeah.
So we might as well just, like, pump it out and just get it going.
Yeah, and, you know, so, the last couple episodes, we've just kind of started in the middle of a conversation. So, you know, we really want to start this one off with a bang.
Yeah, I just, I'm not apologizing, but I just feel bad for our listeners that had to hear that and not be ready for that. At least I had a camera, so I kind of saw it coming. But, yeah.
Yeah, sorry if you were wearing earbuds. But
yeah, that's it.
You're welcome.
My headphones vibrate, so they tingle, so that was, like, really weird. Not good. But, yeah.
Was it, like, the feeling of, like the chills that you get?
Like, no, it's more like, you know those, like, electroshock pens?
Like, oh, yeah.
The ones you, like, yeah, like those. It kind of feels like that, but you just stuck it in my ear. Like, and I'm just like, bro, that felt weird.
All right, so let's pick up where we left off. I know we still had a few things we wanted to go over from the Dodgeball family post here. Where do you want to start?
So, I mean, pretty much we're just continuing on the conversation from the last topic, which was, like, mostly centered on, like, gameplay. So I kind of just kept it in that general, I guess, conversation there. So, and then we could do the next part. We could focus on, like, the other aspects of dodgeball, whether it's reffing, off-court shenanigans, and all that other BS later. But for this topic, we're just going to focus on the other half of that conversation. So I guess we could start off pretty simple. What's your opinion on nets versus back walls? and if you're in that situation, so, like, instead of most tournaments where we go to having one side having, like, a net or, like, a tarp of whatever, that big wall divider on one side and then having a wall on the other side, you can have whether it's a net, a wall divider, or a wall and a wall on both sides. So it's even no matter what side you're on.
Yeah.
So what's your opinion on which one you want?
I'm definitely taking net on both sides. That makes gameplay a little bit more realistic, and it doesn't allow for ball advantage to stay to one side. So even if I'm on two walls and have ball advantage, keeping ball advantage is a lot easier with walls than it is with nets. So I think nets definitely is more realistic or fair if you're trying to look at how, you know, the game should be played. But I mean, when I'm the guy on the team with ball advantage, I do like walls. So
yeah.
But I will say nets is what should be played with. And, I would prefer at tournaments.
Yeah, I was very hardcore wall, but then I ended up changing my mind as you were talking. I thought of a whole point. But yeah, like you said, the ball advantage is the big deal for dodgeball, and then whoever has ball advantage usually has the advantage, regardless. Especially if you're in a very offensive, heavy throwing team, and you have that back wall. If you have the ability to throw at the wall, if you miss, well, you can get that ball back. So teams with a stronger throwing ability usually have the bigger advantage, regardless if both teams have that wall side.
Right.
Because if you have a strong thrower, and let's say, if you're on the back line and they miss, most of the time everyone's kind of doing that zoom, arms out, trying to smack that ball down. But if you miss every time, then that ball is going to keep happening over and over.
Right.
Versus a team that may not have the strongest arm, that ball either is going to die when it hits the wall, or it's going to bounce back a little bit slower, so it's a little bit easier for your teams to manage to get it back. So yeah, I ended up changing my mind. So I definitely agree with you on the net aspect to it, because it really, because one, I wanted to, like, especially on, like, the World League, it makes the shagger job a whole lot easier, because instead of being on that only on the back line trying to stop the balls bouncing off the wall, which is really hard to do, you can kind of just focus on any balls going off the sides and just being a little bit more cooperative with the team. Versus, like, if you're trying to shag on the back line, literally, you're just trying to dive in front of the ball like a goalkeeper, which is kind of the opposite of what most dodgeballers do, because we're normally training ourselves to go outside of the way. And even if you, like, kind of tell yourself, okay, I'm just stick my hand, slap the ball, but in reality, it's a lot harder to do that because we're not really meant to do that as a player.
Right. Goes against everything we think of as dodgeball players.
Exactly. So it's just that we're not really built to do that. Now, granted, if you had a professional level and you were having shaggers, that really wouldn't be as much of a problem because they're not training to avoid the ball. They're trained to go get the ball. So it's a little bit different for them.
Right.
But that's future scenario. That's not right now. So, yeah, definitely agree on the net aspect to it.
Yeah, it's just an added element that, you know, it takes away from thinking about actual gameplay. Well, it is part of gameplay if you're playing with it, obviously, but it's something that you think about more than the actual strategy of the game, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, it totally makes sense.
So you're not really utilizing dodgeball IQ. You're more of playing like that's your crutch.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think like the wall does factor into gameplay, or the gameplay could, like, let's say, trying to think of like a scenario where like some IQ would be involved. Like, if you know you've got a player that's a really good catcher, you can kind of force yourself to kind of miss on purpose, and you just want to make sure you're aiming to the side. Versus like with a net, you kind of have to be a little bit more spot on, because I mean, I know it's like a cop out saying it though, but like when you got the net, if you miss, well, then that's a missed opportunity for throw. But you got right. The wall, if you miss, you have a chance to get that ball coming back. So you can be a little bit more strategic in how you're trying to get that person out, because instead of throwing it and like having that chance of hitting it dead center, you at least have a chance for a glance. With the net, like you can't really afford to make those, I guess, missed opportunities, because the ball may not be coming back the way you want it to. So
right, and that's what I mean by like it's a crutch, where you don't have to, you know, be strategic in setting up two cross throws so like the balls meet in the middle, and you have the ability to try to make somebody reach for a catch. So throwing it just outside their catch zone or whatever, make them try to make a catch they wouldn't usually go for, but because you are leaving them outside because you know that ball is coming back, It doesn't make gameplay more challenging for the offensive team. It gives them something to lean on and gives them kind of this, not, I don't want to call it an out, but it gives them kind of this, I don't know. A crush is the only thing that I can really manage.
I use the word cop out, but it's the same thing. The one thing I don't like about nets is, like, one is a shagger. If it gets tangled up in the net, it takes time out of, depending on the rule sets of the burden, it does take time out of the shagger's time to get the ball back. And if that burden's against you, depending on the rule sets of the tournament, sometimes that burden count's still going regardless if you have the ball or not. Mm-hmm. So usually with the ball, it's usually on the court more often than it is not. And also, like, the nets are almost like a hazard half the time, especially depending on where the placements are on the nets. Because I know, like, there's been like six different times where like the sidelines at Elite Nationals were like on the side, like they're like a foot off the court, and I was like dodge, and I would just kick my foot out, and my foot would just hit the net every time, and I'm just like, I'm gonna bust my shit if I keep doing this move. So I had to stop doing that. So I kind of changed my mindset a little bit in terms of like how I play on the court. But
yeah,
that's like just, that's just a meat thing. I don't think that affects that many people, because I just do dumb shit in the air. But
well, it could,
I know, especially
it could do the same thing. Like, if you have a wall, if like, you know, there's some places that you go play where there's a wall that's a foot off of the court. So whereas you're not going to get tangled up, but you could still hit it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I've seen that. But like, then I've also seen, like, for example, the last tournament I played at Small Wall Nationals this past weekend, they have both problems. So like there was, I always call them problems, but like things you think about, like the wall. Thank you. That was weird. But they had, like, for like on a couple courts, there was the wall. Like, the back line was the wall.
Yeah.
Granted, that was kind of nice because, like, you never really had to worry about stepping out. You can lean up against the wall if you wanted to. But I was like, you would never, ever play like this, like, at any point. But the also downside was the ball was instantly back and bouncing back, regardless of how, like, normally you have a wall to your back, there's usually, like, a couple feet, so you have a chance of stopping it. But since it was the back line, like, as soon as that ball hit the wall, it's going back. Like, there was no way to really stop it unless you had like pinpoint accuracy and timing to make sure you, one, didn't smack your hand straight in the like pathway of the ball, but also have it stop and come back. And then the other courts, the net was also the back line. So that was also like another problem for something. Because I've seen people slip. I was really trying not to go horizontal at any point, because I knew the second my feet go up, my feet are getting tangled by the net and I'm just face planting. So I knew not to do that, but I know that could be another set of obstacles for players to have to kind of navigate around. Now, very few tournaments have either of those in like the same situation, but it was something that we had to think about during that tournament.
Yeah. How was that tournament?
It was actually pretty good. It was a little bit chaotic in terms of like organization, but like overall it was pretty well run. It was interesting because I know for, let's say, bracket play, you had to win by 2 points. So it was like a timed match. You had to go, I think it was 25 minutes for bracket play. And then you had to win by 2 points. So like, let's say if it's like tied game at the end of the 25 minutes, you just kept going until one team wins by two.
Wow.
Which can take a while if it's an evenly run team. Like, I think one team or one game ended up being like 14 matches because Jesus. They just didn't. It was ridiculous.
Just back and forth.
Yeah, and the other thing was, like, if you had, like, 2-1 at the end of the time frame, you still had to play another game until someone won by two. So, like, it was really – it was interesting rule set, and I think they changed it because of that 14-match game. So they changed it, and you went by one at that point. But it was interesting. So, like, it was a fun weekend. So, like, overall, I was just there to have fun. So I really wasn't all that concerned about, like, going out winning and all the, like, normal feelings you'd have, like, the USA tournaments or elite tournaments. It was more just kind of go out there, have fun,
play a lot of people. Ball.
Pretty much. Like, that's really all it was for me. It was great. It was a great time overall. I got to meet new people, so it was good.
Nice.
So I'll definitely try going next year for sure.
And that was in Richmond, Virginia?
Richmond, Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Nice. All right, what we got next up here?
All right. Following the same general, what's it called?
Thread.
I guess. Spread. Yeah, spread of, like, nets and the balls. We can go with soft versus hard boundaries. What's your pick? I know you in the NCAA, you have experience in both, so
yeah,
what's your pick?
You know, I'm a big fan of soft boundaries, and mm-hmm. I think it just, especially in the premier style of court where the court's a lot smaller, it doesn't make it feel as claustrophobic.
Okay.
Whereas in the NCAA, I could totally see it being a hard boundary. It's funny that the smaller court has hard boundaries, the larger court has soft boundaries. But I like the tournaments we've been playing in lately, at least in the Midwest, that it's the smaller court size but soft boundaries. I think it's a great mix. And mm-hmm. I think when you look at, it's hard to compare it to any other sport because, you know, like football,
you're out of bounds.
Yeah. And I guess you can kind of compare it to soccer a little bit where that ball can touch the line, but if it has to go like all the way across the line, I could be totally wrong.
So I think the rule with soccer, again, I don't play soccer, but I think the rule is like the player could be out of bounds, but the long the ball is in bounds, it's still in.
Yeah.
And I think you can't touch the ball if you're out of bounds. I don't know really how it works, but I think you can't touch the ground if you have the ball in bounds. So it's kind of like dodgeball in a way, but it's still kind of weird.
Yeah. But whatever. I like it. I think it's cool. I like how a couple of years ago, Elite didn't even have the momentum rule, which was crazy, where you make the catch go out of bounds, you can come back in. So I like that it moved towards that. I hope this soft boundaries from what we're playing in sticks, I think more people, if they tried it out, they might like it. So I'd love to hear your opinion on this because you don't really haven't really played soft boundaries, have you?
I played it at random tournaments, and I've done it at a very variety of different tournaments, never NCAA, but like a handful of tournaments here and there. And I think it was one in Minnesota. I don't remember where it was, but there was a soft boundaries tournament. And I knew I abused that rule way too much. It was kind of great. Like me personally, I love the rule, but I think from a player's perspective, from like a spectator's perspective, or a kind of like a professional observer. I don't really know what the word is for it, but
yeah,
if you take it from that perspective, it's, I think if you have the hard boundary line, it's way more athletic because one, you have to be able to dodge, you have to be able to catch, you have to be able to do what is required to stay in bounds and still make plays. When you do the whole stepping out of bounds, I feel like it's kind of a cop out. Like you said, it's kind of like the back wall line you said with the crutch.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of like a crutch, especially because if you're using this whole saying, says the court's smaller and you're feeling kind of claustrophobic, well, everybody feels the same until people start getting out. And once start people getting out, then it's like, it's not as claustrophobic. You have freedom to move. You have space to move. You could do whatever you need to do as people are coming out. So there really is no need for the soft boundaries. Like, I think I understand the argument with like the first like 5 minutes of the game when there's 6-on-6 or 8-on-8, whatever the numbers are. It's claustrophobic at first, but as people start to get out, you get more space. So you should be able to make those plays without, what's it called? Needing that extra crutch.
Yeah.
See, so that's kind of my opinion on it. So that's, I'm more leaning towards hard boundaries.
See, I think you can be a lot more athletic with soft boundaries, because with soft boundaries, you have to maintain one point of contact the whole time. Whereas, you know, and I'm thinking just about catching right now. And with hard boundaries, if you make that catch and fall all the way out of bounds, that makes it, I think, even a little bit easier. So if you are on the back line, catch, fall out of bounds, you don't have to worry about staying in bounds at all. So that's almost like, I'll equate it to
I feel like that's a different argument, though, if you're talking about like momentum catches versus regular catches with the 1 point in, because that's a different argument. Because I honestly, like, when it comes to momentum catches, I actually don't like that rule, even though I do use it whenever I do catch it. I am not a fan with that, because like, you can use that as almost an excuse to kind of dive for a catch. Now, granted, that'd be great to watch, but I feel like if you're going to make that sacrifice to make that catch, you should still be out. Otherwise, it's not much of a sacrifice unless you get out. And then at that point, you're just a dumb play.
Yeah.
So I feel like if you're going to make a catch, like, for example, like the prime example is the Jeremy Bizzle catch, where he made a catch. He's basically doing the Matrix all over the line and then stands back up, but he doesn't step out. So, like, or he might have touched the ground, but I don't
know. I think his forearm or elbow hit the ground, but it was in bounds and then came back up.
Exactly. So like, he was fine. So like, that's like the prime example of like pure athleticism. Most people cannot do that.
Well,
if you start, like, I would say not even most, like, I would say 95% of people can't do that.
He's,
I
can, like,
do
that on a good three. Day.
Yeah. Yeah. No, like, I could do that like on a good day, but not on purpose, and definitely not with a catch and staying in bounds. So like, no. But like, that's like the prime example, like athleticism. So if you, especially because, like, if you watch the NCAA, most people catch the same way. They kind of just do that step back catch, leaving 1 foot in. I feel like I said, that's a cop-out, because one, like, at least in the NCAA, that court is so big, and then you're adding an extra, like, 2-3 feet of space to kind of slow that ball down. So it kind of makes it, like I said, it's like a correction. It makes it a little bit easier, but you kind of just stand and face it. You catch it, and let's say you lean back, but you catch yourself in, it's a lot more fun to watch that versus kind of just step back, catch, and then bring it, step it back in. So my thing is, like, if you have the hard boundaries, it should stay hard boundaries. Like, the only time, like, I can understand the hard boundaries kind of going away is the opening rush, where you can cross over the center line just on the opening rush. That's the only one I kind of allow. But every other line, I feel like, should always be hard boundaries regardless of the situation, because it adds another level of intensity. Like, oh, okay, I can't make this play. Or, like, for example, like, let's say a pop-up catch, right? And it goes up. Now, you don't have as much sacrifice out of it. Let's say it pops off me and you're on my team, and you say, oh, shit, we need this ball to get caught, but it's coming out of bounds. Well, you do that two-toe football catch where your two toes are in, you catch that ball, you out. Sure, you may be out, but you bring a guy in, and it was worth it in the end for that catch, because it's, one, adds another level of intensity. It's way more fun to watch. There is a level of sacrifice in regards to that play. But if you know you're not going to get out from that catch, yeah, you'll go for it every time, but I feel like there's not as much at stake with that going for that catch. Does that make sense?
See, I feel like there is, so there wouldn't be as much at stake if it was soft boundaries or if it was hard boundaries.
Oh, I'm thinking momentum. All right, sorry, my bad.
Okay.
I'm thinking momentum catches.
Yeah, yeah. So, so if you don't catch that, though, on a hard boundary, though, then you're out for good. If it was a soft boundary, you could try to catch yourself, keep 1 foot in. All right, this is my only, I don't even call it an argument. My only thing with soft boundaries is I don't think it should be 1 point of contact. I think it should be 1 foot, where, you know, you see guys just keep a hand in bounds. I don't like that. And it's
that's what I do. That's why I like the rule, because I'll just jump out as far as I can and just put a finger in. And that's how I use the rule, because it worked because half the time I would be running into people when I dodge. So I'm like, what's the best way to like prevent someone? Like, cause I kick people when I jump sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, to avoid kicking, if I get the soft boundary, I jump out of bounds, just put one point of contact, whether it's my foot, whether it's my hand, and I just get as far as I can because it's following the rules. So I feel like if you change it to 1 foot, then it kind of just defeats the whole purpose of one point of contact.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm getting rid of, one point of contact. I want it to be 1 foot.
Like, what's the difference between a foot and a hand, though?
It forces you to stay upright. Yeah, because okay.
But why? Because in dodgeball, you're almost never upright all the time. Sometimes you go to the ground sometimes.
Right, so like, what it would force was a lot more people to try to catch, and it would force a lot of people to look for catches, and then it allows for more swings in games.
But here's my argument with this, or argument against that, because honestly, if you put one point of contact in with your hand, it's a lot harder to come back in because you have to keep that hand on the ground, and when you jump, the first thing that goes up is your hands. So you have to completely move very differently in order to keep your hand at that point of contact, mm-hmm. is your hand to come up last. So I feel like, let's say you jump out of bounds, you put yourself in that situation, and let's say someone's trying to throw at you in that situation, it is very difficult to be able to get up without fucking up and lifting your hands up first. Because I've done it like at least 6 different times. I'll just like be, oh shit, get up. And then I'm like, right, my hand went up first, I'm out. So I feel like it's a lot harder to put that hand down and survive off that and coming back in like a, I guess, an efficient way versus putting a foot down. When you put your foot down, all you gotta do is jump up and then put that foot back down. Not really that hard to do.
Right.
But if you have your hand down, like, you can't go for a catch, you're kind of just there. Like, unless you can like just pull in with one arm, which is scary if you could do that. But but most people can't do that. So usually because you're hand down, you're on all fours, so you're in a very vulnerable position at that point. So it's very difficult to get back in. So I feel like if you change that, it kind of just like defeats the purpose. Like, it takes away the athleticism that could happen if you had one point of contact in from your hand.
All right, fine. I'll just commit to soft boundaries all the time then.
That's just my argument. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't use the soft boundaries as much because I know I like to do stupid stuff.
Yeah, no, and I get what you're saying. It does allow for more of the athlete to be put on display. It's just it's a hard line between, I guess, I don't know, between gameplay and athleticism, where the more athletic, better gameplay, or is it you're an athlete, gameplay suffers, you know?
Yeah, like I feel like if you added that foot rule, like it really, because like you say, like it kind of forces you to make catches, but some people, like aka me, don't go for catches unless they're just there. So like if I'm stepping 1 foot out, I'm not trying to catch at that point, I'm trying to get out the way.
Yeah,
so if you're kind of forcing me to make that decision, one, you have to think a lot harder when you do it. Two, it's just adding more, I guess, restrictions to the sport and allowing the sport to kind of just play your game as it is. Like, granted, we get to the professional level, they're going to add way more rules, so it restricts the sport. But I feel like certain rules aren't needed because at that point you're restricting gameplay versus restricting, like, I guess, I don't know.
it would force you to be a better all-around player versus playing your game,
I guess. But that's no fun.
So, yeah. It is fun for people that are already all around players.
That's fair. I'll give you that.
All right, let's move on.
I guess the next one that kind of followed the same thought process would be suicide versus flight kills. So the names are pretty much the same, but there's actually a difference between the two. So suicides are actually
what it sounds like.
They actually they named them backwards, which is why it's confusing. But like, suicides are basically when you basically jump over the front line, you throw a ball, you hit a person, you're still out regardless. Mm-hmm. Even though that's what Elite called flight kills, because, or that's what USA calls flight kills, because it makes no sense. But and then flight kills are when you do pretty much the exact same thing, but if you hit someone, you can return back to your side as long as you don't get hit by the opposing team's throw.
Mm-hmm.
I know this name backwards, but that's just the way I'm going to name it because it makes way more sense to say it that way.
Didn't they get rid of them completely now?
Yep. And I'm super salty about it. That's why I'm mad. That's kind of the reason I let it come up. I was like, what's your opinion on them and what do you think about it?
No, I think that you commit to it, you're out no matter what. And I think you should be able to do it. I think it should be part of the sport. It makes it, it gives it kind of a more of a wow factor, which I know we've talked about here on Bunch. Like, that's what I think, you know, what's going to get butts in the seats to watch the sport. So it gives a spectator wow. It's fun. And it's just overall more exciting to think, you know, this could happen. And, you know, I've seen a lot of times where those flight kills or suicides get caught. So it can be a quick two-player swing real quick.
Yep. Yeah, like I've done only like three of them before they got banned, and I was super sad about all of them because they all got me out in some dumb way. Because I think the last one I did, I forgot I was in a 1v1, so I did it, and I lost. You know, I hit the guy, but the ball went straight up, and I landed. I was like, right. But yeah, like I'm all for suicides. Now, granted, if they're like a very high risk in this throw, and not like for like the safety of like the thrower, but the safety of the receiving player as well, because colliding and everything, because some people would just purposely like check you in order to like get hit or to avoid getting hit, or some people just wouldn't move, or they would just stand in the way or whatever it was. So, like, there's a lot of risk to it. So I kind of understand why USA Dodgeball got rid of it, but for the sake of the sport, like, come on, it should still be a thing.
Yeah. See, I'm still that check guy. If I get caught in the middle and somebody's running me down and I know I'm not going to make it back, I'll go at them anyway, even if it's in mid court. But I
no. See, the problem is, like, for me, I jump too damn far. That's my problem. So, like, I'll literally, like, for, let's say an elite court, I'll literally land, like, 2 feet in front of you if you're on that back line. So, it's, like, it's really, like, kind of, like, a non-necessary jump thing for me because, like, I can literally just, like, jump and just kind of just push past it at you and get you. But it's just, that's a very easy catch at that point.
So is that the open line or the pinch throw line, though?
Open line. So, well, I could actually, I mean, open line definitely make it. I don't ever do it at pinch because that pinch is going to go straight down just because that extra time to release it just takes too long.
All right, so you just open grip it.
Well, no, I do. But like, even if I did it from the pinch line, I'd still land like maybe 5 feet in front of you, which is still like close enough.
Less dangerous, though. But
a little bit like pinch, yeah. Like, I would say, like, if we had like a suicide rule, I would say you would have to land before a certain line.
Yeah.
And I feel like that would, like, one, when you land, you still have to, like, slow down, not murder the person in front of you just by running into them. So I feel like if you force you to land in front of a certain spot, one, you're not going to go in at full speed. Two, it makes it way more strategic because, like, okay, one, you have to not, or I think it was not strategic, but it would also, like, satisfy, like, the whole safety reasoning of it because most players are not going to, if they see someone running them down, they're not going to stand in the middle of the court. They're going to try to back up as far as they can, maybe go lateral side to side. Mm-hmm. So if you have to land in front of a certain spot, it forces one, the thrower, to make be a lot more accurate with it versus just waiting to the last possible second to land it on top of them and throw it. It gives the player that's receiving the suicide a chance to be a little bit more safe, a little chance to be like, okay, he can only land like so far, so I have more options in terms of where I can't go versus like, all right, he's charging me. I don't know where I'm going to go because I don't know if he's going to run into me if I try to dodge in a certain position. So it kind of like satisfies all categories of safety, strategy, and gameplay as well.
So what if instead of a like a land zone, you had a takeoff line? Because that limits the amount of speed you could start your jump with. Mm-hmm. And if it's further behind the throw line, then it has the same purpose. But also, it's more advantageous to be athletic because even if you start from behind the line, the further you can jump is based on your athleticism and your quickness and things like that. So a takeoff line, kind of like in volleyball, you know, I don't know if you know like how they have like that back attack line.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where it's something along those lines where this is the line you have to jump at if you're going to be doing this. And if you jump after that, it's null and void.
Yeah, I could get with that. Now, the thing is, though, it depends on what ball style you're playing with, because if you have the attack line, the neutral line, or if you have the attack line, the checkpoint line, and the center line, and then a takeoff line, that's way too many damn lines. Especially, you'd have to have two different takeoff lines for both sides. That's a lot of lines to try to keep track of, and you're running. You're not really trying to look at the ground. You're kind of looking up. So you kind of have the line in your peripheral. So this could be, I think that'd be really hard, but I could definitely vibe with it, though.
Well, it'd be... Well, if it's open, it'd be easy if it's just the other team's throw line. That line's already there. And then it's adding.
Holy shit.
Yeah, that's
so far. But
I mean, that's adding like space.
Zero wind up time. Well, no, it's definitely adding space. You just, there's literally like zero like approach to it. That's just like a two-step approach.
Yeah.
No matter how athletic you are, that's like a two-step approach. So you're not getting very far at that point. So
or then the midline?
I would say, yeah, the midline would definitely be like right, enough. That attack line, like, holy shit. Because I know when I take off, like, I'm literally starting at the back line. I'm like, I already take like four steps and I'm already at the like the attack line half the time. So I'm just like, if you take it to that back, like my attack line, it's like, holy shit, that's so damn far.
Yeah. It just makes you think twice about doing it, because can you get up to speed, or are you just going to be like jumping basically a foot because you had no running room? So I think a takeoff line would be, it would allow for more athleticism to shine in like a suicide or flight kill or whatever you want to call it. Instead of the landing zone, which limits everybody.
Yeah. All right. USA Dodgeball. If you're listening to this, think about it. We could definitely try to bring that back. I want to
clip it, tag them.
Exactly.
Enter it.
So the next one's this one's a fun one. So what's your thought on sharing balls with players that are perceived as weaker throwers or otherwise less valuable versus hoarding them for the players that are perceived better? So like, let's say you have really good, like two, let's say you're on a, like a pickup team, right? Mm-hmm. You got two really good players on your team and you got like four not so good ones and you have most of the balls. Do you evenly spread out the balls, or do you just give most of the balls to the better players and then players that are not as good don't have a ball?
Depends on the situation. I mean, most of the time I'm probably giving that ball up, but like if it's 6-on-6, I'm usually not going to be throwing my arm out in the opening rush. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So if there's somebody that's eager, wants the ball, go ahead. By all means, take it. I don't care who you are. If you want it that bad, take it. Now, see, I don't even know if it changes, because then if you get down with it's, you know, me and somebody that's perceived as, you know, not a thrower or a lesser player, whatever the case may be, I still want that person to have a ball, because that's another eye that they can go and pump fake that takes half a second off of, or what, a fraction of a second off my throw, that they might have caught it, and that little hesitation is an out. So I don't know. And if it comes down to, you know, I have one ball, me and this other person, and it's 4-on-2, I'm probably giving that ball away anyway, because I'm looking for a catch and I don't want to have that mental hesitation where, am I going to block it or am I going to catch it? What am I going to do? And then I just end up just touching the ball with my hand, and then the ball's in the other hand. I'm like, what the hell was I doing?
Yep. Totally get it. And I agree. I would say like it almost always depends on the situation, but I would say more often than not, it's always a better idea to share it with the, I guess, the weaker players, regardless if they can throw or if they're just not a strong player overall. Because like I said, when you're on that front line, regardless if who's throwing, like, you have no idea who's going to throw initially. So any pump fake is going to, like I said, take your eye off the ball, and that's an out for your team. Mm-hmm. So like, even if they're just supporting your team, that's still better than them just pump fake with their arm. Cause that always drives me nuts. Whenever I see someone pump fake with their arm, I'm just like,
really?
unless you really sell it, then like, yeah, it sometimes works, but it's not very effective most of the time. So,
no.
It's always better to have a ball in your hand and do with that. Now, if you're on the back line, it's a little bit different, because some people, like you said, some people like prefer going for that catch. Now, if you communicate with that with your team, that's a whole different story. But I feel like this question is more going toward, like, if you're not really communicating, like, I feel like this is going toward, like, if you're a stronger thrower, are you passing that ball off or are you keeping the ball? And I feel like most players on the competitive scene aren't going to share it unless they're, like, really egocentric.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I'm hot shit, so I don't need to share the damn ball, which I don't see very often. Definitely see it, but I feel like that happens to newer teams versus like teams that have been around for a while.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, sometimes there is a liability in it where, like, if you have the one ball, they have a big ball advantage, there's a wall behind you, and most of those balls are going back, then, you know, maybe if I have the ball, I'm protecting myself on this throw and see if we can grab another ball, and then we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't expect that if on the other side of that is like, if there's one ball and you have it, I don't expect you to give it to me. I expect you to protect yourself. And I'm not going to be the guy that's like, what are you doing? Give me the ball, you know? So yeah. if that lesser player has the ball, I'm not going to get in their face about not giving me the ball.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's, yeah. there's, I don't even,
like, I think it depends. Like in, like, let's say it's like a 2v2 situation and you only have one ball for some reason mm-hmm. and the lesser player has the ball. I feel like depending on the team and the situation, if the other person is a much stronger thrower and your team's chances of winning that 2v whatever, I feel like they should have the ball. Granted,
the lesser or
the stronger player, I feel like they should in, like, I would say most scenarios, because that gives your team a much higher rate of success. Granted, if that stronger player can catch really well, different story. But, like, I feel like they should have the ball, because even if that, I guess, the lesser player gets out, the stronger player still has the chance to pull it out versus the lesser player.
Yeah, and
but again, it depends on the team, depends on the situation, depends on the players themselves and what they discuss themselves as well. But,
see, I think that comes down to that other player's awareness. And yeah. if that person, you know, 9 times out of 10, that person knows that, you know, they're a much better player than me. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times people offer it, you know, knowing that, you know, I'm clearly yep. not the stronger player here. Do you want this ball? Where, and you know, you have the opportunity to communicate that and say, no, I just want you to pump fake when they're getting ready to throw, you know, get them to yep. think about it, maybe space the balls out, or yeah, cause I'm going to throw it as they're throwing so I can look for a catch. Like, so it depends. Yeah.
Like, I know, like, whenever I'm in that situation, like, let's say I'm the better player and someone else had the ball, I usually let them keep it because I know most of the time I could dodge most people's throw. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, if I have a ball, that means they're going to probably get out. And that means I'm stuck by myself. I'd rather have someone else with me. But it depends. Like, it depends on a lot of factors. And it's never an easy question. It's not, it's like a philosophical question that yeah. there's really no right answer to.
Yeah. And I guess most of the time, it doesn't even matter their skill level. Like, I mean, it does, but it doesn't matter in that situation. It could be, you know, maybe I'm the lesser player. Somebody has a hot hand when they're not typically a better player. Like, they have a hot hand, yep. feed the hot hand. Like,
exactly.
It doesn't matter if, you know, 9 days out of 10, I'm the better player. Give it to the hot hand. So it yep. being aware of, you know, what's going on around you that day, that, you know, it all factors into your dodgeball IQ, being able to adapt to the situation and understanding that situation, which ultimately is what makes you a better dodgeball player. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I guess that's where I stand on it.
Yeah, and we pretty much agree on it. So we got one more, but we got time for one more. So this next one's on foot traps. So when the ball hits your foot and the floor at the same time, what's your opinion on that ruling? Yeah. This one's like a very like 50-50 answer for the most part. Like, yay or nay.
So you're saying like hits side of my foot and floor same time? Mm-hmm. I'm calling it an out.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. If it's that, it's, I know in baseball it's tie goes to the runner, but if you weren't athletic enough to get out of the way, I'm calling you out.
Fair. Like I'm like split down the middle. Like, I agree at the same, like, you should be out, but I also feel like if the balls get hit you in the foot and the floor at the same time, it probably hit the floor first.
Yeah. Just
based on the shape of the ball. I mean, it heavily depends on the angle too, but like, I feel like most of the time it hits the floor first. So like, mm-hmm. if it hits your foot at the same time, I feel like you should be safe. Because one, it's really hard for like refs to call out half the time. And
right.
two, it's just like, I feel like when most people throw, it's coming down. So it's going to be hitting the floor first. Because I think it all depends on the size of the ball. 8.5 definitely hits the floor first most of the time, mm-hmm. unless it's more on the top of your shoe. But the smaller ball types, I feel like it hits your foot a little bit more. But like, yeah, like I'm down the middle. I don't really have an answer yeah. for this one. Like, I personally like yeah. Like, if I get hit with a trap, I'm like, fuck this. I don't want to be out, but like, I am out, and I feel like it should be safe, but it's not. That's what the current rule is. But
I'm gonna equate it to, like, you know how like in like middle school or something, where mm-hmm. if you were in a circle of friends that are getting in trouble, even though you weren't the one that did it, you still probably weren't doing something right, so you're in trouble or should be in trouble. So that's kind of what I'm going to equate it to, that, you know, maybe it hit the ground first, but maybe you should have just moved your foot.
I got hit with the trap. I was so mad because it was against Megan Fricker on the East Coast, and she already annoyed me from the last tournament because she just kept getting me out of the stupid and I'm like, I'm not gonna, she's not, because her, here's the situation. So we had a ball go out, and I'm like, I have a ball, I'm in the corner, I'm thinking I think she was gonna wait till the ball came on the court. I didn't think she was gonna throw, and then she throws, but like it looks like it's going out and wide, and it just tags me on my back foot on like the absolute like tipsiest of toes, and I'm just like, no, that didn't happen. This is some bullshit. And she's just like waving by, and I'm like, I hate you right now. So Megan, if you're listening to this, screw you, I'm still mad about that. But yeah, that's why I hate traps, because it's just like sometimes there's just nothing you could do, because you think it's gonna hit the floor and then it doesn't.
Yeah,
so it's just like, or it gets under your blocking ball. That's even worse when it happens. Like you try to block it and like you block it, but it still hits your toe and the ground and your ball at the same time.
Yeah,
and you're still out. Like, I feel like in that situation, you couldn't really do anything better because you did everything right. You still got out. So it's just like, I feel like if it's trapped, it should be out or you should be safe, but whatever.
What if you catch it off your foot trap?
I think most of the time when they in that situation, if you catch it, they still call you out most of the time.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I don't agree with that.
Most of the time, yeah, that's what I'm saying. But the thing is, if you don't agree with that, but it hits the floor at the same time, you're out. And if you catch it, you're still out. So that's where like the problem with that whole
situation is. If you catch that and it's on your foot, maybe it did.
Because in that situation, it should either be a catch or it should be nullified because it hit the floor.
Yeah,
it shouldn't be you're out or caught because. Mm-hmm. Is still hitting the floor in some way, shape, or form. So that's why I'm thinking, like, if it hit the floor at any point, whether it's foot in floor, or, I mean, that's the only situation. If it hits your foot in floor, you should be safe because it still hit the floor. But
yeah,
we're here now.
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that because it's almost, I'm almost tempted to say it's like the same thing. You should have made a clear catch. So you're out.
Like in the NFL, like you have to show like clear signs that the ball didn't hit the ground, or like if you, let's say it's one of those like really close catches but your hand's under the ball, then you're good. But the problem is with traps, usually it hits your toe,
yeah,
and it's never like completely under. Now granted, if it hit the top of your foot, clearly that's a catch, you never hit the ball or hit the floor. But like most times if it's a trap and block and catch, it's mostly on the ground, but it's like half the ball on your toe, but it's not like your toe is not really under the ball, it's kind of like just wedged kind of into the ball. So that's why I'm just like, it really shouldn't be a catch. I don't think I've ever seen it called a catch. I might have seen it like maybe once or twice, but more often than not, it's usually just an out.
Depends on who it is. If it's Wes, I'm calling him out all day.
No, I feel like whenever that happens though, like most people like subconsciously pull the ball back, so it makes it look like a catch. So the ref's like, oh, well, obviously if you're looking at it, it's a catch.
Yeah.
But in reality, when you blocked it in front of your foot without pulling it back. So that's why it kind of, if it ever goes to the catching side, it's because they kind of pulled it back initially. So
yeah. All right.
Yeah, but it's a weird rule I'm not a fan of. But
yeah.
That's my two cents.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like if you're a ref, you have to make a hard line on, you know, that was foot catch or it was ground and nothing.
Yeah.
It's not both. I don't know.
And catch it now.
Until we get instant replay, you know, where you can actually slow it down and
we would need challenge instant replay, like, we would need so many different angles for you to throw, like, and not like for the situation like those, you need to have like a camera on the floor.
You need like three.
Yeah. From like every angle. It's like a couple inches off the ground, just facing off the floor. Yeah. And you need a couple on the lines. You need a couple just off bird's eye view, side view, everything. So like really you just need a whole room, just cameras on every single like 5 feet square.
Yeah. You need a bunch of those like pylon cameras the NFL has now.
Yeah. Say that would be pretty dope.
Yeah, except for they'd get hit and be gone halfway through one match.
If you have the nets in front of them, you won't have to worry about that. Especially if the nets are taut, then they don't have to worry about them like spiking into the net. So you can always have them like not like peeking through the nets, but like just right behind the net. So like, that way the nets aren't in the way. But that's a whole like logistical thing that we're not paid to do. So don't worry about that right now.
Yeah. Let's hit this last one just because it's fun and we're already
okay
way over for
45 minutes.
Yeah, for trying to do shorter episodes, but right. I mean, that's just right. Not in our skill set.
I was going to save it for the next episode, but we can do it now.
Nah,
so
let's just do it.
The first one, the common one, the dodgeball family, so taco versus pizza. I feel like you answered this one before, but I can't remember what the answer was.
I might have. I don't know.
You probably did it with Steve at one point during his interview with him.
Could have. I feel like I'm going tacos, though.
Bro, no.
Yeah.
No,
yeah, it's all pizza. Day.
You're in the north, dude. Tacos aren't even that good up here.
It's true. But I lived in California for a little while.
Fair. But you were more of like a tourist that was just there for a while.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. But yeah. Dude, tacos have so many variations. I mean, pizza.
Nasty pizza?
Pizza's that dough. I guess you can change up the sauce if you're doing like a barbecue pizza.
Change the sauce. You can change the. You live in Detroit. You have like a different type of crust. You got that. You got.
See, I don't even think Detroit pizza is a real thing. They call.
I like it. I'm mad I like Detroit pizza, but I do like it.
They say that, like, I don't know. It's weird because there's like Jets is Detroit style pizza, but mm-hmm. But the sauce has to be on top for it to be Detroit style pizza. But
yeah.
Chicago deep dish has the sauce on top. So it's not even a real thing. It's just like, it's a pan pizza.
I like the pan pizza style. That's what it is. Like, I don't care what the exact order is, but the style I like.
Detroit's just trying to claim it.
That's fair. I'll give it that. And like, it's got nothing, but that's all it's got. So I'll give you that. All right, but the new one that I think Mark Akam's trying to start is waffles versus pancakes. What's your answer on that one?
Oh, waffles.
Okay, I can respect that. Honestly, yeah. I don't really care for either one. Like, honestly, if I had to pick, I'd probably just pick French toast, which I'm mad that's not even this argument. But the thing is, like, I don't eat any of them. Like, I do, but I don't. Like, if it's there, I'll eat them. But, like, I don't really have a preference to all three of them. It just depends on what my mood is. Like,
yeah.
If I want pancakes, I'll get pancakes. If I want waffles, I'll get waffles. If I want French toast, which is rare if I ever want French toast. But I feel like I like them better than the other two because it's not as, like, cakey, I guess. Like, it's just so – you don't get as full after French toast. Like, waffles and pancakes, you get – you're dead after.
Dude, it doesn't matter which one of those three you're eating. Afterwards, you are – done for a while.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. But I feel like I could eat more French toast pieces and not regret as much versus like eating a certain number of pancakes or a certain number of waffles and I'm just like, I food coma, but like not in a good kind of way. I'm there and it's just carbs and I'm just like, I can't process this right now.
Yeah, and there's no way I'm having chicken and pancakes. That's just weird.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that. Chicken and waffles, so much better. Chicken pancakes, it seems wrong.
Yeah, like, I can give it's it like that. You're trying to make a breakfast taco. Not about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I like waffles better because just I don't know what it is, but it's more satisfying with put the syrup on and you got the little squares and you can fill up the squares and it's just, it seems more satisfying.
No. Like, you don't fill them with the syrup. You got to fill each square with peanut butter and then syrup over
it. I do that too. Yep. That's another way to go. Oh man.
Yeah. But yes. Waffles right. For sure.
Yep. But the sandwich pancakes are good like sandwiches. They're just cake sandwiches. Like you just put the peanut butter in the middle, slap another one on, you bite it and it's decent, but meh.
See, waffles, you got to take time to do it. The pancakes, there's no craft. You're not putting it in its own fancy machine. You're not spinning it. You're just pouring batter on a pan and seeing what happens.
That's also fair. So yeah,
that's just a bougie answer though.
A little bit. Not everyone's got a waffle iron, man.
Yeah, I don't. I like Eggos.
Neither do I. They're so bad though, but they taste so good.
All right, let's get out of here. I'm clearly getting a little slap happy.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. All right, guys, make sure that you're following all of our socials, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. I think that's all of them, right?
I feel like we should just record this so you don't have to do it every time off the top of your head because that would just make your life a whole lot easier.
I don't know. It's interesting every time. Check us out on there. Make sure you're following. Make sure you're sharing episodes with friends. Rate and review. Yeah, leave us reviews because that helps us climb up higher in the search algorithm or like explore algorithm. So it gets Dodgeball in front of more eyes. Check out Nagini brand. Order your finger wraps. Use code BALLOUT15 to save some money. Got anything else?
No, not about it. I'm going to say there's more tournaments coming out. So get those finger bands. They're very helpful. Let's say I know the FDC is coming up at some point, so we'll have a booth there. So we'll have, we're going to try to get some stuff down there. So we'll figure out what we're going to do that. But we'll probably talk to you about that later at some point. Not tonight, but at some point.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah, check out Facebook Live this weekend for the tournament down in Cincinnati. I know the Gamecocks will be posting some stuff on there. So what up? Check us out. And yeah, man, I'm good if you're good.
I'm good, man.
All right, then we out.
Peace out, guys.